Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Mary Wenger. Mary, I'm delighted to have you with me.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to do this.
I was thinking before we got started, I think that we joined Portland Mennonite Church at about the same time, and we'll get to that later. But all of that to say that I think I've known you for a pretty long time, but I realized I don't know where you started life. Where were you born?
I was born in Fargo, North Dakota.
And was that a home area for your family, or?
We lived in a small town 20 miles from there.
And so did you actually grow up there?
I grew up in Castleton, North Dakota. Lived there until I went to college. And other than visiting on vacations in between school terms and with my family after I was married, there I never lived there again.
When I think of North Dakota, I think of cold. Tell me a little bit about what it was like to grow up there. Maybe, well, we're in the spring now. Were there specific things that happened in the spring that maybe were unique to North Dakota? Or,
you know, I grew up in a small town that was built around a farming community because the area around Fargo is part of an old ancient lake bed, and the landscape is completely flat and the soil is very rich. So the soil was black dirt. That's the kind of stuff that the farmers grew their crops in. And it was, you know, the breadbasket of the Midwest, although Kansas probably thinks they are too. But anyway, the soil was amazing and still is.
So did you grow up in the country or in a town, or what's that story?
Well, we lived, my father was a farm laborer who had many different employers. But when I was born, we lived not in Castleton, but in a community a few miles north of there, but in a house around a farm, in a farmhouse. It was such a small town that there wasn't really much town. And then when I was 4 years old, we moved to Castleton. And I spent the rest of my life living in that town until I went off to college. And it was just really a town that grew up around the farmers, like most of the little farm rural communities were.
So when you moved when you were four, was it that your parents were able to actually buy a house at that point, or what was happening?
My parents never owned a home. We rented houses wherever we lived, but my dad, I don't know what he did at the time I was four, but he ended up just becoming a laborer for multiple different kinds of jobs. And eventually he worked for one of my uncles who had a plumbing business, and he would go off to work and do wherever the work was at. But yeah, we just lived in that town, went to school there, had a church. You know, there were many churches in that little town, more churches than bars, which, you know, kind of is unusual these days in small towns, but now there's not so many churches. And he had multiple jobs, but that was it. My mother was busy having children.
That's the next question. How many siblings and where do you fit in the family?
I was raised with six siblings, and I was the third. There was one more child who was born that I never met when my mother died. She had an unexpected death and was 7 months pregnant at the time. So I'd never met that baby, was born prematurely and lived a few hours.
So there were seven of you who lived.
There were six of us in the family. I was one of six siblings, and I was the third. So I have three younger siblings, and now I'm the oldest.
So how old were you when this terrible tragedy struck your family with your mother's death?
I had just turned 11.
Did your family talk about this? What was your experience of being a motherless child?
Well, Gloria, it was not fun. My mother was from a large family, and we ranged in age from 3 to 15. And everybody wanted my baby brother. I mean, all of her siblings were wanting to farm us out. They just thought my dad couldn't do this. But for some reason, he did. And we're grateful that that's the way we were raised, that he kept us together somehow. Cobbled it together with single women in the church who came and helped out with daycare and childcare and cooking and cleaning for a while. And once my baby brother was in school, that was over. But, you know, we just learned to manage. We pretty soon knew how to run the wringer washing machine by ourselves. And, you know, our food, you know, our meals weren't spectacular, but we did the best we could.
Were your older siblings girls or boys or some of each?
One of each, yeah. My older sister was 4 years older and the brother was 3 years older.
So were they still in school when this happened? And did they continue in school?
Yes, my brother and sister were, well, at 14 and 15, they would have been in early high school. And when my sister graduated from high school, she went off to Heston. Did a couple years there, and then she came back to North Dakota and found a job because she didn't have any money to keep going to school. And she stuck around, not always in the town, but close by. And she actually helped my dad pay our bills. She took care of us and became pretty much our surrogate mother.
So your father never remarried?
He did. He did twice, but the first time was about the time I was graduating from college. It was 10 years later, and that marriage lasted a decade, and then he moved to Oregon and wanted to get away from those hard memories and soon found another wife and was married for another 30 years.
So obviously you attended public school.
I did.
And I did. What was the name of your church? Tell me a little about your church growing up.
It's called Castleton Mennonite Church. We moved around for a while. Our church was like my home. We had rentals. And eventually the congregation was able to buy their own church. And it was a lovely stone building that for many years was the oldest stone church in North Dakota that was still being used. It's not an active congregation anymore, but it was built by the Episcopals, so it's got gorgeous stained glass windows, kind of like ours at PMC. So I grew up with that, and I loved those windows. I was able to be married at that church, and yeah, lots of good memories there.
Now, one of the things I know about you is that you are very involved in music. And I'm wondering where that came from. Was your family a musical family or?
Not so much. My mother had a lovely alto voice. And I remember sitting in church with her and trying to imitate her alto singing. And I sang in choir at school. And that was it. We didn't have piano lessons. I learned to play the trumpet and French horn when I was in high school. So I did learn how to read music. But no, other than singing in church, I did not have any big musical background there.
Did you have a piano in your home?
No, we did not.
Did you have one at your church?
No, there was an old pump organ in a back corner room off the front of the church behind the pulpit that nobody used because we didn't use musical instruments in church. So it never got used. When I got married, I rented an organ from the funeral home in town. And my stepmother found somebody who knew how to play the organ. And, you know, we made music that way. So we made do. It was a very traditional old Mennonite congregation. And my wedding was the first time that the pastor actually allowed exchange of rings in the ceremony.
You were a trendsetter already.
Yeah.
So it sounds like money was in short supply much of the time as you were growing up.
Very much so.
But after high school, you went to college? What happened there?
I went to Heston for 3 years. That's feels like I must have been not doing very well because Heston's a two-year school. But after I was there a year was when the college started its nursing program. And I was scheduled to be a nurse. That was my goal. So I stayed on and did their two-year program and graduated there. 50 years later, when I went back for that class reunion, they were celebrating the, I don't think it was the first class even. I think they had had one other class ahead of that graduating their four-year graduates with their new four-year program. And that was pretty exciting.
And that's just in the last few years.
Yes.
So the three-year nursing program started while you were attending?
Well, it's only a two-year program. It was then. But I was there a year before they started. So then I stayed for the full 2 years to do the complete nursing course. Yes. We graduated in 1968. So that was the first graduating class.
Where did this idea of becoming a nurse come from?
Well, I tell myself this story. I'm not sure if it's real or not, but I tell myself that when I was thinking about what I wanted to do after college, I thought my choices were limited to teaching and nursing. And I thought there's no way I can be a teacher. Well, lo and behold, 50 years later, when I end my career, I learned it before then, but, the irony of it is that nursing is 90% teaching. So I ended up, coming into teaching through the back door. But my mother used to care for a woman in our community who had polio. And when we first met her, when I was a child, her parents were still living and they were elderly. So they were living in wheelchairs anyway. And she was in a wheelchair permanently from her disability with polio. And my mother would go and give her a bath once a week. And when my sister got in high school, this woman hired my sister to do that. And then when Carol graduated and went away, she hired me to do it. And this job got passed along to all of my sisters. And we even spent some of our high school time sleeping at her home and in her room because she would need to use a bedpan in the middle of the night. So there was a little cot in a corner of her bedroom and she'd say, "Mary, Mary," and wake me up. And then we'd get the bedpan out and take care of that. And then I'd get up in the morning and go off, get her out of bed or so. I don't know. There was another neighbor woman who would come and help her dress and get going too. So I didn't always have to do that. But half of the time while I was in high school, I was sleeping in another house. But that was a good thing because there were three girls and one double bed in our home. And when my sister came home, then there were four of us sharing a bedroom. So it was good to be able to have someplace else to sleep sometimes.
That was one of my questions was, tell me about your first job. And were you being paid for this work when you were doing this?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Not much, but yeah, a little bit.
Did you have other first jobs, say, in high school? What were you doing for money?
Well, they weren't very well-paid jobs. Obviously, babysitting. And I also helped the local town librarian. Our small town had the library open only one day a week, and that was Saturday. And our librarian was our longtime third grade teacher. Everybody in my family, including my older cousins and even one my youngest aunt, had this woman for third grade. And she would always leave town before the library closed because she had to get on a bus and go visit her sister every week. And so she hired local girls to work in the library. And my sister did the job before I did. I kind of inherited some of her jobs. That was one of my first jobs too. When I was a couple of summers, I'd spent working with for various families doing cleaning. So did some of that too.
So how did you pay for Heston College?
A few small scholarships and loans.
When you graduated, you were going to be a nurse. At some point, you met a gentleman named Jim Wanger. What's that story?
Well, I had met Jim at Heston. We sang in the choir together. He was a year ahead of me, and we weren't involved at all at that point. We were just co-choir members. And then when he graduated, he went to Bolivia for a couple of years, and you've already interviewed him about that story. And I was just graduated and living in Heston in an apartment with two other fellow students who were working at a nearby hospital. We all went to the same hospital to work, and we met at a party just right the same weekend he came home. I was throwing a party at somebody's house, and one of his cousins showed up with him in tow. And yeah, we didn't get started then, but you know, he at least knew somebody. You know, otherwise he was gone 2 years. He didn't know anybody anymore. And so eventually it took off.
So you met him right when he came home from Bolivia.
Yeah.
And you remembered each other, I trust, just from singing together.
Well, sure. We had been singing in choir for 1 year, and I was there 2 more years after that. But yeah, we had known each other. He was sort of a student director that year, part of the time. So, yeah, he was part of the choir.
So you said that you got married back home in North Dakota. So after you met and got engaged and decided to get married, what was the plan? Where were you going to go geographically? Did you have some ideas or some places in mind? Or?
Well, Jim was still in college for 1 more year when we got married, and he was in school at Wichita State. So we had to stay in Kansas, and there was no thinking about where we're going to go. He was had to finish school.
Did you keep working at Heston, or did you then get a job in Wichita?
We moved to Wichita after we were married. We got an apartment, and I changed jobs. The hospital I was in Halstead, Kansas, was part of the Sisters of St. Joseph network. So I was able to transfer to a St. Joseph hospital in Wichita and not lose any of my seniority and all of that stuff. I had to go to the night shift because you start at the bottom. But yeah, it was okay. And we'd only stayed there a year because he took a job in Oregon after he graduated. And so we left town, left the state.
And what kind of nursing were you doing? What floor were you on?
I was on what's called a med-surg floor. That was what I had done in Halstead and what I did in Wichita. And that's basically, it's mostly post-surgical care. And of course, changed it so much since then. I was no way I could qualify to be a hospital nurse anymore, but that was it. I was a charge nurse both at Halstead and at Wichita. And, you know, you're in charge when you're on off shifts like swing and night shift, you'd have one or two people with you. And in Wichita, it was one other person.
And when you came to Oregon, was the plan that you too would then get another nursing job, that you would be a working woman?
That was right. I worked at Albany General Hospital because we moved to Albany, and worked there until our first child was born.
What was your church situation in Oregon?
Well, we attended Albany Mennonite Church because Jim was on staff there. They hired him as a half-time youth director. So he was on staff there. And after 1 year, the conference also hired him for the other half of his time to be youth director for the conference. And he did that for another year until the church terminated his employment. And then he started doing other things, and I was still working. And
so once children started to come, did you then just go back to part-time, or did you stop working outside the home for a while to raise the children? What happened?
Well, when Ada was born, I went back to work after, I think she was 4 months old. That's our daughter. I was working part-time. And I went back to work for a couple of pediatricians in town because I had been head nurse of the pediatric department at Albany General. And my plan was to take a nurse practitioner course in Seattle in pediatrics. So I was working for them and, you know, just kind of helping out with well baby checks and things that they were holding me by the hand while I was learning my way through that part of the job. And when she was 7 months old, I went off to my course in Seattle with baby in tow, stayed with a person who had been a pastor of the Mennonite church that Seattle eventually became, but he was currently the chaplain for Salvation Army. Anyway, his wife was a lovely woman and she ran a daycare. So through a mutual friend from Albany, I learned about her and they gave me a place to stay and she watched Adra during the daytime and we had a place to stay for 3 months. We made it work. I made a couple trips to Albany and Jim made a couple trips to Seattle and, you know, we made those 3 months work. So after that, I went back and started working for these pediatricians and that was going fine until they decided that their practice needed another doctor, someone who could cover them on calls. That's the kind of help they were looking for. So they let me go and I worked for the health department for a while, helped them set up well baby clinics all around the county of Linn County.
And were you continuing to find nursing to be a very fulfilling career? How were you feeling about your choice?
I was finding it fulfilling. You know, I ended up working for 49 years after my graduation. So I think it must have been, there must have been something in there, but I did not keep working at that point. We adopted our second child. And when he was 6 months old, I pretty much was too stretched to be working half-time and taking care of a two-year-old and a newborn. And yeah, I just said, okay, I can't do this anymore. So we made it work and I didn't work until those two had another sibling and he started second grade. I stayed home a few years.
At some point, you ended up in the Portland area. How did that happen?
Well, that was a roundabout way. We moved to Redmond, Washington when all the kids were in school and Jim was working in Seattle. And, you know, he had started working in insurance and was moving his way through that industry and looking for better opportunities. And he started working in Portland and that was a long commute from Albany. And eventually we moved to another job. So he commuted from Redmond into Seattle every day. And we raised our kids in the school system of Redmond, Washington.
What other things were you finding to do now? I'm assuming that you found another church to be involved with and music continued to be an important part of your life?
Yeah, we went to Seattle Mennonite Church, which was the only option in Seattle at the time. And at that point, I started doing song leading, which I had never done at Albany. Not because I couldn't do it, because my church in North Dakota taught us how to do it when we were in high school. They made us do the song leading on Sunday evening service. I don't know if that happened in your church too, but it did in ours. That's when they allowed us to learn how to lead music. But I never did it until we went to Seattle. I was involved in a worship committee there and in some of the song leading. And so that's where I started doing that.
And you're also involved with sewing, and I don't know if you do quilting, but those kinds of things. Where did that come from and when did it get started?
When we lived in Albany, and once I wasn't going into work regularly, and my children were small, I started going to the sewing circle at Albany. And Deb Coates' mother taught me how to quilt, because there were two kinds of quilts there. There was a fancy quilt for auction, and then there was a baby quilt. And then there was their comfort knotting went on, and this group met once a month, but they worked all morning and had lunch and worked some more in the afternoon. It was an all-day thing. And I learned how to quilt at the hands of Fern Zare and learned how to tie comforters and blah, blah, blah. I did never sit at the fancy quilt and put stitches in the really nice quilts. But I caught the bug. So when we went to Seattle, that church had a very strong bunch of quilting women in it. And they had a tradition of making a quilt for every first baby of a family and for every senior who graduates high school. So there was a lot of quilt making going on there that I got to be involved in. And of course, when my kids got ready to graduate, they all got to have quilts and they still have them. These wonderful gifts that the church has wrapped their graduates in. That's very meaningful to me because my kids all have one of those. And so I've just got hooked on quilting. And the first quilt that I made for myself to keep was a graduation quilt for my daughter. Not for myself to keep, but to, you know, one that I was making that wasn't for someone in church. And it didn't get finished till she was out of college.
But we've got to get you to Portland Mennonite.
Okay. Well, in 1997, Jim took another job in Portland. And so we came trucking down to here and came to Portland. There were three Mennonite churches then, and we visited them all. And we had been a part of starting Evergreen Mennonite Church, which is an offshoot of Seattle Mennonite on the east side of the lake. And that was a church that met in a community center and still does. And there you have all your equipment in a box and you put it away in the closet and put church up in the morning. And when you're done with service, you put it all away again. And when you're a part of a small church like that, everybody has to wear multiple hats to make the organization run. And I wasn't interested in doing that all over again in a small church. So I said, let's go to Portland Mennonite. We already know a lot of people there. So we did. I'm not sorry.
So you've been there for about 25 years.
Yes, 25 years. This fall, it'll be 25 years. That doesn't make me an old timer in terms of some people there, but it feels like a long time.
And we came the next year in 1998. And I think we joined right before Ralph Lind left. So I think we were in the same group that joined the church toward the end of...
Well, you have a better memory than I do for that.
One final question. When you can just listen to any kind of music that you want to listen to, I mean, you're retired now and maybe you have the radio on or a record or a CD or something. What do you listen to?
You know, my favorite is church music. Yeah, it is. There's a lot of beautiful stuff out there. And yeah, that's my favorite music.
And if I remember correctly, you're involved in another choir as well, a community choir or something in your area?
Yes, Jim and I sing in a group called Vancouver Master Chorale, which is a community volunteer choir in Vancouver. And we just had a concert a couple weeks ago. We sang a requiem, and we're preparing for our spring concert, which will be next month. And it's a bunch of opera and Broadway music. So anybody likes that stuff, give me a call. I'll tell you how to find out about it.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for just giving us a little glimpse into your amazing life. And thank you for all that you do for us at Portland Mennonite and the ways that you're involved there. We're so appreciative.
Well, you're welcome. And thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.